Hi, and welcome to Canada Obscura. My name is Mary.
And I'm Shelley, and this is the podcast where we tell you all these strange, spooky, scary, interesting things about Canada, which sometimes includes true crime, murder, hauntings, cryptids, urban legends, etc., etc. As such, sometimes trigger warnings do apply. Again, murder, rape, sexual assault, torture, child abuse, mental health talk, drug use. Abuse.
Yeah. Physical abuse.
Well, mental abuse too. Sometimes. And possibly gore and other things. Check the episode description because we're a lot more specific there, as we often forget when we're actually talking about it because it is early in the morning and it's early in the morning.
Yeah, but I always make sure to put it in the description, so. What's up?
There was an intruder in the lab a couple nights ago.
Oh, God.
It was great fun.
A literal intruder?
She was, yeah.
Oh, holy shit.
Like, because I was working evenings, and this was around 9 o'clock, and I was streaking plates, so I had my back turned to the big receiving window, which is literally just a big open space. And I heard my coworker say something to someone outside, and then I saw her, like, kind of walk towards one of the back benches. And at this point, I still had no idea what was going on. I don't know if my coworker said anything to me or if she was just like, Shelley can handle it. But while she was on the phone with security, I heard someone out the door yell, like, let me in or open the door or something like that. I can't remember. And I looked, but I couldn't see her because of where I was sitting. And there's two doors to the lab, like an outer door. And then you get to the big receiving window and then a locked inner door that actually goes into the lab. So obviously she couldn't open the inner door, but I couldn't see her. So I thought she was outside the outer door, which my coworker, I guess, had tried to close.
Okay.
But she had gotten inside anyway.
Oh my God.
And then I just see this woman lean over, like, the bench where the big opening is.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, ma'am, you can't be in here. I actually said that.
God.
But, I don't think she was actually aware of, like, me. Like, she was so hopped up on drugs. I'm not sure if she knew there was actually even anyone here. Because then she hopped over, and I was like, what? Of course, my first instinct is to make sure that, you know, everything is safe and sterile.
Absolutely.
And closed all my plates.
Yeah.
But she just started walking around muttering to herself.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't think drugs. I thought, like, she was having some kind of mental break. Like, she was really sweaty. And, like, and I guess kind of the sad thing was I noticed she did have a postpartum belly.
Oh.
Like, she had very recently given birth.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was walking around muttering to herself, kind of saying, like, I need to, like, get out of here. I need a jacket or something. I guess she was cold.
Oh, my God.
I guess the sweat was probably her coming off her high.
Yeah.
And then she just grabs a lab coat. All the stuff in the lab coat pretty much falls out.
Oh, my God.
And then she just books it out again.
Oh, my God.
And, like, it took security 20 minutes to get here.
Jesus.
Because we hadn't called a code white. They just, like, assumed it was just some random person. And they were like, well, it's a hospital. It's huge. Like, but, like, okay, she wasn't, like, violent then. But she could have been. Yeah, and she was wandering around the hospital, and apparently she had a needle with her, and she tried injecting herself again.
Oh, God.
And the coworker whose lab coat she stole, he keeps a little box cutter in his pocket, and she had that hadn't fallen out when she grabbed it, so that was in there with her. They confiscated it because they weren't sure whose it was, obviously, or, if she used it on anyone. But, so we basically accidentally armed her.
Jeez, yeah, genuinely, yeah.
Yeah, but that was fun.
Holy fuck.
It was interesting.
That's awful. Jesus.
I mean, really, like, I probably should have been more freaked out than I was. I don't know, maybe because this is me growing up in Jane and Finch. Actually, that stuff didn't happen much when I was in Jane and Finch.
No, it really doesn't, but you need to keep a calm demeanor, because I just felt bad for her. Yeah, but the moment you freak out, she freaks out, you know?
Well, that's exactly it, right? Like, everyone, it was me, this one lady, and then there was a guy who was staying late, and he, like, he does jiu-jitsu, but he's just standing there in the back while I'm standing here, like, right in front of this lady. I'm like, wow, chivalry is dead. I mean, like, she didn't seem like much of a threat. I think she was paranoid, right? Like, she was coming off her high, she was looking around her shoulder. So, like, I was trying to be like, are you okay? Like, do you need help? But she, I don't think she saw me.
Yeah.
Like, I might have been standing in front of her talking to her, but I don't think she saw me.
Yeah.
So, that was my night. It's fun.
That's one hell of a night, Jesus. Yesterday,
hopefully you had no intruders.
No. Yesterday, I went and I spent the day helping my friend move into her apartment because she moved into Yonge and Eglinton. Yeah.
Oh, nice area.
Yeah. Jelly. But it's a big move. She's coming from London, Ontario. So it's a big move. And so I got there around like 11:30 noonish or whatever. And her parents were there. They were helping us out too. But it was like so funny because like her parents, like I was there from about, okay, let's just say noon until 11 p.m. And what we got done was, like, her and I, we built the whole bed with, like, the headboard and the storage drawers and everything. We built the,
Is it my bed? The IKEA bed?
It is an IKEA bed, but it's more intense because you and I have the same bed.
No.
We don't have the same bed?
No, I have the one with the headboard that has shelves in it.
Who has the same bed as
me? And drawers.
It's a similar one to those, but it's one of those that like
mine was a bitch to build.
Yeah, this one was. But yeah, we did that. We built like her cat tower. We built, but she has this like shelving unit that's like it's like you tuck the kitty litter in there, and then there's like a table on top of it. Oh,
cute.
Yeah, we built. What else did we build? We built her desk. We built drawers. We just went ham. In like 11 hours, we built all this shit. And in that time, her parents built one coffee table and put up the curtains. Because they were just fighting the entire time.
That sounds right.
Right? Because they were just so frustrated. And her dad was just like, in the nicest way possible.
It was all IKEA stuff?
A lot of it. There was some stuff from Wayfair.
And, okay, which also, because they send it, so I guess it's also in pieces.
It is.
Wayfair?
And then there was a couple of and a bathroom unit. I forgot about that. Okay, we also built a bathroom. Again. Am I?
And we're back. Are we back? Clue?
Yes. Okay, sorry. There's going to be a lot of...
sorry.
Oh my God. There's going to be a lot of cuts because we're doing remote. Recording again, but unfortunately we're having a lot of technical difficulties this morning. Everything is just not fucking working. So her parents were just like arguing the entire time, and then her and I were just like, and then another
arguing
piece,
about another like piece. Who's doing it right.
Yeah.
Oh,
quite literally.
Yeah, you and know, like, they say like building IKEA furniture makes or breaks relationships, right?
Quite literally, yeah. And like they were just going at it the entire time, and it was just like nonstop, like, you put in the wrong piece, no, you put in the wrong piece, no, that I don't understand these, and it's just like, and then her and I are just like, oh, can you pass through that? Yeah, okay. Oh, do you mind just pushing that in? Yep, sounds good. Okay, yeah. And it's like we killed it. Like her apartment went from being like completely just boxes and like shit and bags, and then like by the time I left, like it was literally like it looked like a home.
That's good. You know?
Like there was still stuff to put away.
Yeah, obviously that, you're not gonna get that all done in one day.
No. But it was like it was really funny. I am like sore from top to bottom. Everything hurts. But like we got it done, and I was like, because she kept being like, I'm sorry for keeping you here so long. But I looked at her and I was like, let's just fucking finish this. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Let's just do it. Get it all done. That way you could just actually start moving your stuff in and settling in. Because she has like, she's working. She's
already working. Yeah.
She moved, right? So like, it's literally just like on the weekends is when she's like putting stuff away.
Yeah.
And even then it's yeah, so I was like,
I guess
fuck
you can
it.
Try to do a little bit like every day just to so that you're not left with so much on the weekend.
Yeah, but like I in regards to the furniture, I was like, let's just get it done so you could get rid of the fucking air mattress you've been sleeping on and just like move in so you could move in. And so like we did, and like we just there's like you could walk through the room now, like that's through good. Her apartment. You could like right. You, there's a place to sit down. There's a place
my condo.
To eat. Like,
my condo is gonna be so small that there's not really much space to walk through anyway.
You know what? Like hers is very similar. It's a condo technically, but she's renting.
Yeah.
But it's a new one. One of the really new ones. Like they're still constructing some of it. Like the elevators still need a lot of work. But like it's. On yeah, it's on the smaller side as all condos nowadays are.
Yeah,
but
especially
still
in that
like,
area, there's not much space.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. But she has a balcony. She's got her own room. She's got she actually has a study room.
Yeah,
that
so do
she's
I.
Use as her own office.
Or else, so
yeah,
will
so.
I? Apparently, they've started like excavating the site, according to my aunt
Good.
Who passed by. So I'm like, yay, progress. So,
hell yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about before. Like, if it sells out quick, chances are that means they could start construction early, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully they get on that sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that was that. Other than that, oh, I graduated.
Oh, yeah. That right. thing. That little bit.
Yeah.
No big deal.
It was... No, of course not. I got very drunk. I did shots with the dean. That was the best part. My buddy bought everybody a round of shots, and then he was like, oh, imagine if we got the dean to drink with us. And I looked at him and I was like, I will make him take the shot with us. Like, I don't play games. Like, if you want it done, I'll have it done. And so we did. We all took our shots over. I interrupted him even though he was in the middle of conversations with like big CEOs. I didn't fucking care. I was like, would you take a shot with us? And he was like, a shot of what? And I was like, tequila. And he was like, all right, let's do it. And then we did. Sorry about anyway. That again. But yeah, so we did shots with him. And he was like, thanks for including me. And I was like, I'm shook that nobody ever does. You know what I mean?
Because
he had a great time. And like, I had him meet my family and all that. And he was like, no one ever brings me to do that. And I was like, why?
Well, like I guess sometimes it is a little like, especially if you're saying, oh, shots and stuff. Like, it's a little awkward.
Yeah, but like we're all graduated. We're officially like like the after party was literally at a bar.
Oh,
that the faculty is holding.
I can't remember what university was, but like
it was
we
just
didn't stay for long.
No, for us it was just in the main building, the main downtown building for university.
Okay.
Yeah, but in this case it was like we're at a bar. The faculty is holding it at a bar, and so it was like, dude, fucking drink like. But yeah, that's essentially it. That's really it. I'm just trying to
good
get
times.
Yeah, I have to go to a volunteer thing today for Pride, and then that's pretty much it.
I've got a thing, so we gotta motor on.
Hell yeah! So
okay.
You go first. Yeah.
Yes, I'm doing the spoop. Although this one's not really a spoop, it's more like pirate booty.
Oh, hello. Okay.
So I'm going to be talking about the Oak Island Money Pit.
Oh, my God.
Which I think I've referenced once or twice before, but never actually talked about it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's also like it has a TV show. I'm pretty sure the Oak Island Treasure or something like that.
Something like that. I don't remember.
I'm going to Google it while you do that.
Oak Island is in Nova Scotia. In the Mahone Bay? Mahoney Bay? I think that was where one of our haunted ships were.
Right.
If I recall. And it's basically been like, you know, rumors of pirate booty.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the only backstory. Since about 1795, people have been trying to get to the lost treasure. I don't know exactly what made people so convinced that there was so much lost treasure, but actually
right.
In a little bit I'll go to another site which kind of talks about the system of how they keep the treasure buried under
this
water and stuff.
The show is called The Curse of Oak Island, by the way, but continue.
Oh, I don't think there's actually a curse. I think
probably not.
The actual story is just that it's a mystery. So the story began when three young men noticed that there was a bit of a depression in the ground. And remembering that there were all these stories about pirate booty in the area, they began digging. So at first, a couple layers of flagstones kind of broke away, and they found two wooden platforms further down. Okay. So I guess it seemed like, okay, like someone was doing something here. It's not just a hole. Because a depression in the ground can also mean a lot of things, including a buried body. Just saying. Because, you know, when the body decomposes, it starts to flatten out, right? So obviously all the soil depresses, which is how a lot of people find clandestine graves and how we were taught to find clandestine graves, which is weird depressions in the ground with either a large amount of concentrated flora or a strange area that's barren. But anyway, no bodies in the story that I know of.
Oh my god.
So the three kind of like left the dig because they couldn't find anything. About 9 years later, they came back, and apparently now there's a syndicate that was formed to retrieve the buried treasure. About 30 meters down, they found a slab that had some weird symbols on it. So, of course, they thought, like, you know, we're close. Like, pirate symbol stuff. I don't know.
Okay. Pirate symbol stuff, same.
Yeah. But then when they came back the next morning, there was actually, like, the whole shaft that they dug was about two-thirds full of water. Which looks like someone or something in the, like, a mechanism or something, or someone had come by to try and, like, keep the treasure from being found. Now, like, over the next 150 years, lots of people have tried to go find the treasure. They went through the original shaft, and then they dug around, like, several shafts around it. But every single time, the tunnel seemed to flood.
Okay.
So the most that people have found was, like, I think in 1955, they found a couple of things, like an old key, a bit of some gold chain.
Okay.
But it probably seems like it was planted by whoever had hid the treasure to just...
Right.
Or no, it was planted by whoever was looking for the treasure, who are hired to do so, so that they can at least tell their bosses, oh, we found something.
This. Yeah.
Yeah, and hold on, just pause for 1 second while I try and find the page that talks about the possible mechanism.
Okay.
That it actually... okay, so I found... It's a video.
Okay.
But the gist of it is they have, like, you know, these shafts that people dig that seem to be leading to the treasure. There's all these kind of channels leading into it from, I guess, the ocean, because it is an island. So if you imagine like a vertical shaft leading into the ground, and there's all these levels of like different platforms. And then at certain levels, there's actually water channels leading to it.
Okay.
So if you imagine, like, you know, the platform above the channel is keeping the water from going up.
Okay.
But if you break through that platform, then the water keeps going up because the water is continuous. It's coming from the ocean.
Right.
So every time someone breaks through a new level, it just ends up flooding the tunnel. So they actually made the system where... I guess, like, you can keep digging far, but you'll have to send divers down, probably.
Right, okay.
Because it's just going to keep flooding, and it's just going to keep messing up the dig.
Right.
So, yeah, this clip looks really old, because this guy is in some real 80s fashion right there. Those glasses, man, and that corduroy jacket. Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
That's fantastic.
That's the story of the Oak Island money pit and possibly how it works.
Oh my god. That's well, you know what? Like I said earlier, it spawned a whole series. A whole series about finding the fucking the curse of Oak Island, whatever the fuck. Oh, there's gonna be
a lot of wrestling. Whenever you have pirate and treasure and mystery, seems like a good like Showtime movie.
Oh yeah.
Crappy B-lister movie.
Oh, yeah. Also, very quick pause. oh my god, my wrist. I'm like holding up the microphone and my wrist is not happy. Too much work yesterday. Too much work yesterday. Okay, and rest in pieces. On Friday I was at a shoot all day too, so my hands are not happy right now. Okay. And we're back. Okay, so the one that I'm doing is more of a historical one, which is a little bit... You're usually the one that does the older ones. I'm not usually the one... Oh, this article's by somebody named Edward Butts. Anyway, so this is... this story is about Ambrose Small, and this takes place in 1919. So I'm getting my information from a couple of sites. I'm depending mostly on the Canadian Encyclopedia because the Wikipedia page was just like a bare bones version of this.
Yeah.
And there's like a, I found a Maclean's article from 1951 that goes like in fucking depth, but it's so like, it's so advertised. No, not advertising. It's like flashy in the way that it's written because it's the 50s and they're trying to sell a fucking a story, so it's like, it's all, it's like speaking in like rhymes and stuff. It's so ridiculous, but anyway.
Oh no, I know. Rhymes,
it's like, there's, I'll send you the link, like some of it's just like very like it was like, okay, it's making light of a situation that probably shouldn't be made light of, but anyway. So,
well, that was the 50s, they gave no fucks.
Yeah So the story is on Ambrose Joseph Small, who was born in 1866 in Bradford, which is here in Ontario.
Did you just say Bradford?
Bradford. Okay, sorry. Bradford, Ontario.
That's like, you know on the TTC? Sorry. Yeah? On the TTC, because, you know, the whole Raptors thing, everyone's making a big deal. And even before they won, like, everyone, like, all the advertisements were everywhere in support of the team, whatever, right?
Yes.
On the TTC, every so often there's, like, an announcement, and it's this guy who pronounces Raptors, Raptors.
Raptors.
That's, it makes me wonderful. So angry.
Oh, my God. It's like when people go Toronto, and you're just like, a Toronto.
No, but like, Toronto, I can kind of get, because there are so many different ways to say it, and they are technically all right.
Yeah.
But who the fuck says Raptors?
Raptors.
Like, Raptors. Have you...
Like, is there even an O in Raptor? Raptor?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah it is. All right. Yeah, either way. But anyway, so he's born in... Okay, this article says Bradford. The Wikipedia says Newmarket, but either way... Somewhere around
here. It's like East Gloomsbury, Bradford, Newmarket area. It's north of here.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Not much.
Yeah. So so he was born to Daniel and Ellen Small. And then by 1880, his family moved to Toronto, where he became the manager of the Grand Hotel. And then next door to the hotel was the Grand Opera House. And which, like, at the time, was like a prestigious establishment. It had all the best shows coming in New York. And in about 1884, so 4 years later, Ambrose began working at the Opera House as an usher and a bartender. And he was also involved in illegal bookmaking and taking bets on horse races. So a few years later, in 1889, he had a fight with the manager of the Grand Opera House, Oliver B. Shepherd. And then, so Ambrose went to work for the Toronto Opera House, at the time, a venue for vaudeville and popular melodrama on the touring circuits controlled from New York and Montreal. So while he learned, the intricacies of the business and how to work and all that, he was promoted to manager, and then his mom died. And during this time, his dad married Josephine Corman, who was the daughter of a wealthy beer baron, Ignatius Corman. I don't fucking know. But that's an important point. Yeah. It's an important point, though. So Ambrose was a very good businessman. And then within a few years, he actually accumulated enough money to buy the mortgage on the Grand Opera House. So he officially owned it and then fired Shepherd, his manager. And then
Wouldn't you?
Mode? Yeah, I know. And then he fought his way to the forefront of Ontario's highly competitive theatrical business. So he...
I did not know that it was that competitive.
Right? But he understood public tastes in entertainment, and he was very ready to adapt to change. So, of course, he did well. And then he actually went into a partnership with the Detroit theater mogul Clark J. Whitney.
Yeah. Sorry, can I just point out that this guy's name is Ambrose, which is one of the most theatrical names you can have.
I know. Ambrose Small. But he did a partnership. Sorry, there's probably going to be a lot of rustling. I apologize. I can't actually monitor the microphone audio today because I can't find my earphones. But I used them on the shoot and now they're gone. But so he went into a partnership with Clark J. Whitney, who controlled a major circuit in Ontario. And then when Whitney died in 1902, Ambrose bought up theaters in Peterborough, Hamilton, St. Thomas, Kingston, and other communities, and leased others. And they all depended on him for booking the shows because he took that control from New York. And he ended up running an empire of 34 theaters, half of which were outside Ontario. So he like branched out. And then anybody who wanted to perform on the stage had to go through him. And like that's stars like big and small. So in 1902, the same year that Whitney died and he took over everything, Ambrose married Teresa Corman, who is his stepmother's younger sister. So their combined yes. So she was also rich because she's also the daughter of the beer person guy.
Is that weird? Like, is it technically incest?
Well, here's the thing. I think because it's like, it's not like genetic, like you're just literally step. So it's like, whatever. But it kind of is like, it would make her his step aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I know it's like an awkward situation, but because it's like not genetic, fine, whatever. But anyway, so because they're both rich, their financial assets together made them fucking hella rich. But the problem is that they had nothing in common. So like other than like wanting money and liking money, they had literally nothing in common. So Teresa was a devout Roman Catholic and she was very interested in the arts and doing charitable works, while he was a gambler and a womanizer. So she would take, it says here she would take shopping holidays in Europe while he would go to racetracks in the United States. So, and he even had a secret chamber built in the Grand Opera House so that way he could bring in chorus girls to this room and do stuff. But she knew that was happening. Teresa knew. But she even found like a bundle of love letters that his mistress had written to him.
Jeez.
Yeah. But they lived in a huge mansion in the Rosedale district in Toronto, but they slept in separate bedrooms.
Which I think the Rosedale area is supposed to be fancy schmancy.
It is. But they, like I said, they slept in separate bedrooms. I don't know. It seemed more like a wedding for...
A marriage of convenience.
Yes. They had no children. They nothing in common. They kind of just lived their own lives. And she knew that he was out doing stuff. So he ended up gaining a reputation for being ruthless and unscrupulous. He apparently enjoyed finding means of cheating associates. So he would...
Sorry, yeah. I misheard you and thought you said finding memes.
Oh. And I'm like... memes of 1902? Yeah.
No. Yeah.
No. It was means of cheating associates. So he would write up contracts. Yeah. Yeah. He would write up contracts and put in clauses that he would call jokers that would work to his financial advantage. So he would cheat people out. And he was also suspected of using his influence to quote-unquote fix horse races. And then he also fought a lot, so it made him he was fighting people a lot, and he was very underhanded, so people did not like him. And so
like physically fighting people?
It says quarrelsome nature, so take that as you will.
Oh. So he liked to argue.
Yes. So Toronto journalist Hector Charlesworth knew him personally and said he wrote in a book, More Candid Chronicles, which was published in 1928, "If I heard once, I heard a score of times the ominous words, somebody will get Amby someday." So people didn't like him. So by 1919, live theater was going down because movies were becoming more popular. So people were more interested in movies than they were in theater. So he decided to get out of the business. He struck a fucking deal, and he sold his chain of theaters to Trans-Canada Theaters Limited of Montreal for $1.7 million. And that's back then money. That's a lot of today money.
It's like 50 gazillion today money.
Yeah. So they 1 million of that was payable upon signing of the document of sale, and the rest would be paid in installments. So December 2nd, 1919, Ambrose, Teresa, and his attorney met the representatives of the Trans-Canada Theatre's W.J. Shaughnessy and the legal office of Alan Aylesworth. What the fuck is with all these names, man? But that was it. That was
it's right. Old-timey names.
Yeah, but it was at 65 Yonge Street in Toronto. The document was signed. Shaughnessy gave Small a certificate check for $1 million. Ambrose gave the check to Teresa, told her to take it to the bank. So she walked it to the Dominion Bank at the corner of Yonge and King Streets at 11:45 a.m. And then it wouldn't be announced to the press until weeks later. So so Ambrose, Teresa, and the attorney met for lunch at the King Edward Hotel, which after which Ambrose and Teresa went to the St. Vincent de Paul Orphanage, where she made a donation. And then that's when she stated that they parted company. So he said he'd be home by 6 o'clock. That afternoon, she told her sister that her and Small planned to travel the world. So keep that in mind. He ordered a Cadillac, he ordered jewelry and a fur coat for Teresa. He met his attorney at his theater home office to clear up some of the business matters. And then he invited the attorney and Teresa for dinner, but the attorney had to go catch a train to London, and he left at 5:30 p.m. And he was the last person known for certain to have seen Ambrose. After that, Ambrose vanished. So 2 weeks passed before the Toronto police became aware that Ambrose was missing. Teresa said that she didn't report it out of fear of scandal. Quote, "I believe my Ambie is in the hands of a designing woman somewhere and will come back." But nonetheless, she offered a $500 reward, which again at the time was a lot, for information about where he was, and distributed it across Canada and the United States. So Ambrose didn't pack any suitcases and wasn't carrying much cash at the time. Police found no evidence of him paying for transportation or accommodation by check. Newspapers reported sightings of him in various cities, including Boston and Minneapolis, but those reports proved to be groundless, as it was a story that he had been kidnapped by New York gangsters. When Teresa increased the reward for information to $50,000, the story of Ambrose became an international sensation. And then there were sightings claimed as far as Mexico. Self-professed clairvoyants offered their services.
Of course.
Yes. In New York City, reporters asked visitor Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, creator of Sherlock Holmes, if he was going to help the Canadian police find Ambrose. Rumors circulated that he was in hiding, that he was wandering around somewhere with amnesia. But the speculation that had the greatest possibility of being true was that he had been murdered and the body had been disposed of. So the first suspect was James Doughty, who was his personal secretary. Doughty had worked for Ambrose for years and often complained about his tiny salary. Doughty disappeared soon after Ambrose did, along with about $100,000 in bonds from Ambrose's safety deposit box in the Dominion Bank. And then police learned from informants that Doughty had spoken of plots to kidnap or murder Ambrose. Doughty was eventually arrested in Oregon. He confessed to stealing the bonds and was sentenced to term in prison, but because police had no proof that Ambrose was even dead, they couldn't charge Doughty with murder. So then comes Ambrose's sisters, Gertrude and Florence. They believe that Teresa had conspired to have him murdered. Investigators found no evidence connecting her to any wrongdoings. The sisters accused the Toronto police of involvement in a papist plot? Papist? I don't know what that is, but the police dug up the basements of the Small mansion and the Grand Opera House and a ravine in Rosedale and found nothing. The sisters hired a private detective who also failed to find any trace of Ambrose, but who carried out a smear campaign against Teresa. Okay, so me, personally, I think it's weird that she was like, oh, we're planning on traveling the world. When he had no intention. He just wanted to go fucking gamble, get drunk, and fuck women. Yeah. That's all he wanted to do. She was the one that wanted to go traveling, wanted to go do charity work, wanted to go do all this. And then he bought her stuff, but she also didn't report him missing for 2 weeks. when she knew. Yeah,
that's definitely sketchy. Although, it, to be fair, like, I don't know, it seemed like maybe she didn't actually see him that often. Right? Like, it sounded like he was always out doing other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they were married, but not really together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to be fair, like, it is kind of understandable if she was like, you know, I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah. Which is very true. And, like, I do want to point out that, like, she saw the money being put away. She put away the money herself. So, like, he didn't have access to it that she knew of. But who's to say... But, oh, that's the thing. She deposited the money, but the Dominion Bank said that there was no... he didn't pull out any money. So, like, there was, like... Like, he was out and about with no money. They don't know what happened to him. But anyway, by 1923, the Supreme Court of Ontario declared him officially dead and upheld his will, which left most of his estate to Teresa. She died in 1935 and gave the bulk of the estate to the to Catholic Charities. And then in 1960, the Toronto Police...
You said gave the majority of her inheritance to the cat.
It's Catholic Charities. My apologies.
Look... That would be more fun if it was to the cat.
Right?
That's a Disney movie there. Right? That is actually Aristocats, isn't it?
Because the
old lady who owns the cats basically gave all her inheritance to the cats rather than to the servant.
Yeah.
So he was pissed, so he tried to get rid of the cats. I think that's actually the plot.
I've never seen I've seen it as a kid, but I haven't seen it since. So I genuinely can't fucking tell you. I remember we had it on VHS, but I watched it when I was like... five. But anyway, so she died in 1960. The Toronto Police officially closed the case. So speculation of his fate has continued, and it has been in a lot of works, like a lot of magazines, books, paintings, radios, whatever. And Canadian author Orlo Miller made a case for his body being incinerated in the furnace of the Grand Theatre in London, Ontario. And a recent study by Canadian crime historian Peter Vronsky offers a theory that Teresa was involved in Small's murder and the police officer in charge of the investigation staged a cover-up, as we mentioned earlier, but he was, like, pushing that. Sorry,
my dog just started whining, so you might hear that in...
Aw.
Yeah. You'll just hear.
And anyway, so the case still remains an iconic Canadian mystery. But that's it. That's it. I did see in the other article that after he went missing, the 1951 one from the McLeans, whatever, apparently when people would be, like, digging out in their, like, in their gardens and their lawns or whatever, people would make jokes like, oh, you digging for Ambie down there? So that was his fucking legacy.
Jeez.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the story of Ambrose Small, who is influential and a bastard motherfucker.
That definitely needs its own, like, Lifetime, Showtime.
Oh, fully agreed.
Movie, made for a TV movie.
Fully agreed.
Okay, my dog will not shut up.
All I could hear is rustling, yeah. Anyway, okay, so we are on the internet, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, Canada Obscura, all one word. I have... not been good about posting as much on Instagram as I said I would be because this week has been fucked. But I will try to put some more stuff up. We have an email, canadaobscurapodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on any of our platforms. Just fucking reach out to us. I love talking to you guys. I promise. I love you guys. I will answer. I'm still not getting notifications on anything, about anything. My messenger stopped. I stopped getting notifications for Facebook Messenger.
My notifications for Facebook, I mean, granted, like, I don't know what's going on, but I haven't gotten any notifications, and I'll open it and I'll be like, oh,
flooded.
Four people were trying to talk to me.
Yeah. I can't, like, my Messenger isn't working anymore either. Like, it works, but I don't get notifications. So I just open it and it's like, fuck, I miss literally six different people trying to figure shit out with me. But anyway, yep, fuck. I don't remember what I said. So anyway, we hope you enjoyed yourselves. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Oh my god, my wrist. Ah! Way too much physical work yesterday.
Oh my. Hold on. There's an ad playing on this Men in Black International. It won't let me skip it. I mean, normally I wouldn't mind because I do want to see this movie, but like,
yeah,
I've seen the trailer a few times already.
What so. Movie?
Men in Black International.
Apparently it sucks ass.
Really?
Yeah. Aww. I know. I was excited to see it, but everyone has been like, that's, it's fucking terrible.
But that's what everyone says when they do like a remake of an old classic. True. Or not a remake, like a
sequel?
A new thing.
What would you call it? Whatever.
Like, it's a sequel, I think. It's not, yeah, it's not a remake at all. It's a sequel.
Yeah.
That's what everyone says. They always complain about it, and they probably complain because now there's a black woman in the lead.
Well, because you know what? One of my friends was super excited to go, like super excited because like, she's a huge fan of both of them, and he was like, this is one of the movies that I actually almost walked out of, and that's never happened before. He was like, it was so bad. So I was like, okay.
I think also part of the issue is they try so hard to live up to the original.
Yeah, which is not
that it really messes with the quality, which is like, you might as well just, you know, go with it, but just do something, do your own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But
then there's going to be people who complain that it's too different, and then whatever, you just can't.
Yeah.
Anyway,